you completely stomped my high-level mage, and I was, like, mad. But I was, like, happy mad.
Yeah.
It actually occurred to me after the battle that your mage couldn't have counterspelled my mage anyway, because to counterspell, you have to see the person casting magic. Oh, yeah,
you were invisible.
And I was invisible.
Yeah, no, you absolutely stomped him.
That was a pretty funny combat. Ellie goes invisible with her wizard, runs in, proceeds to
counterspell his invisibility. Which is kind of the height of rudeness.
It's to
prevent someone doing something that you've just done.
Yeah. He should have rolled higher on the initiative. One other quite interesting way of making low-level combat more compelling is that monsters don't have to fight to the death. And we've kind of talked about this with having alternative objectives. But the monsters themselves, your enemies themselves, probably are going to have some sort of instinctive self-preservation. Unless they're a zombie, then they're probably not going to want to die. So if they see all of their party members around them falling, there's a good chance that they're either going to run away, surrender, or try in some other way not to die, because they probably don't want to die.
Yeah, players never surrender, but the NPCs can.
But I feel like running away, they might try, but you try and tell the player characters that they're not going to get the final blow, not going to get the loot, not going to get anything. They're probably going to, like, stop that from happening.
That's true, and I think that is totally fine, because, for example, if the fight is dragging on and you get a couple of the NPCs to run away, especially if you have, like, a rogue that has 150 feet of movement, for example, shout out Relix, friend of the pod.
Yes.
You know that this NPC has almost zero chance of getting away.
Yeah.
You know, instead of going through the motions for the next couple of rounds, it's obvious this NPC is going to die, the players are going to win this fight. He could try to run, like, preemptively. The players could track him down really quickly and then just, I don't know, get a killing blow on them.
Especially at lower level, like, yeah, have enemies run away all the time, because it is the perfect thing. If they don't get away, that's fine. That's, you sort of expected that. If any of them do get away, now you have an unexpected trump card that you can play later on.
Absolutely.
Because you just, like, oh, this low level guard, you recognize him. And now he's gone and gotten his buddies.
Yeah, that could be a very interesting plot hook.
Yeah.
2 years down the track.
I mean, yeah, for sure, for sure.
He's not a big fan of your party, so.
Yeah, or it could just resolve 2 turns later when he brings back 10 of his guard friends.
Yes. Sure. Yeah, for me, it's like the more enemies get away, I mean, balance and probability, I'll probably just forget about them. And I'm like, oh yeah, that was a guy. Yeah, I don't know, he's somewhere. But if I do remember it, I can just be like, well, here's this guy. You remember? Yeah, Jeff. Yeah, Jeff that we spoke with once.
That's right, and that could work both for fleeing, but also for surrendering, giving more opportunities for interesting roleplay. Maybe they can give you some information. Try not to torture them for that information.
Yeah.
As a general rule.
Well.
But you know.
But how are you supposed to let your violent tendencies out? You gotta eat their toes.
Oh no.
So you can, instead of killing them, I mean, you can kill them anyway if they try to run away, but as the GM, you can surrender, you can try to flee. You can also resolve the fight narratively, and this can work in certain situations where if it's extremely clear that the players are going to win and there's only probably a couple rounds of combat left, the NPCs don't have enough in their tank to do any significant damage to the party, and the party's very close to probably having a long rest, so it doesn't really matter anyway. It's not necessarily a bad thing to resolve the fight narratively and say, okay, you end up killing all these guys and everything's fine and we're going to end the combat there. I'd use this very sparingly, but it's not necessarily a bad thing if the combat is dragging on.
The kind of cool thing when you're the player is, you know, how do you finish this off? So maybe if you're going to offer the players the ability to do it narratively, you say, we're going to end it. Why don't you tell me how you, as a collective, finish off these guys, so that you're handing the agency back to them. You still get the kind of, how do you want to do this? They've got a chance to feel awesome about it rather than it kind of just petering out, which it may have done anyway, because, you know, like you're saying, this is combat that has gone on too long and is obviously over. But you're still giving a some cool moments, you know, and then they can come up with some way that as a group they've used all of their skills. I think as a DM, one thing I want to do, try and do more, is more frequently ask players how they do something. And that's one good way.
And it's good. It not only gives the players time in the spotlight and time to be creative and do cool things, it also eases the pressure on the GM to have to narratively describe everything.
It also overcomes one thing which I always find a little bit sad in combat, which is like everyone has contributed to the end of a fight, but it's one person that finishes something off and kind of, it's not like gets the glory exactly, but you know, you'll be like, well, actually I had a big part in playing that, but I don't get to explain how I finish it off. But if you say, oh, as a group, like how do you collectively do this? That's a cool way of giving everyone the glory, as opposed to handing it to one person who will have absolutely contributed, you know, to a group effort.
Yeah, that's a super interesting idea.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you've got a fighter that's doing 3 attacks per round, chances are they're probably going to be the fighter.
Exactly.
There's a big caveat here that it's fine to do that in certain situations. What you really want to avoid is modifying monster stats on the fly to make things more interesting. It can be very, very tempting if you have a monster that's on, say, 20 HP and someone lands a crit and does 19 HP of damage. It's really tempting to be like, oh, he only had 19 HP. How do you want to do this? You know, everyone's like, yeah, everyone cheers. It's epic, blah, 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 blah. That is a very, very slippery slope. So I'm not saying never do this, but I'm saying be very, very careful when you do this, because if your players ever find out that you consistently modify the stats of your monsters on the fly, if you change their HP on the fly, then it kind of ruins all immersion that you have.
Combat kind of becomes meaningless.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think there are maybe some moments where, I think one time I might have shaved a couple of hit points off someone because narratively it made so much sense for this person to be the one that delivered the final blow. They'd just done something freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I could have been like, you've done this freaking awesome thing. The monster's hanging on by a little thread. I think that one time I was just like, look, the next blow is going to finish them off.
Yeah.
How do you want to do it? There are always exceptions to a rule, but I definitely agree. I think if players don't think that there is a specified endpoint, then it doesn't really matter what they do anymore. They're just subject to whatever the DM's whims are.
Yeah, it becomes the DM telling a story rather than...
Exactly, the players.
I think the key for that is if you're doing it, it has to be specifically that type of thing where it doesn't matter for the entire fight. So if there's like one HP difference, so clearly the outcome of the battle is not in question. So if you do it just to go like, well, either people are tired and want to wrap up the session, or if one of the players has just done all these heroic things, knocked down, got up again, did a bunch of damage, and you go like, okay, you almost got it down, I mean, you may as well, right? Again, if you don't do it too often, if you don't do it too cavalierly, then I think it's okay.
Yeah, it's something to definitely have in your GM toolkit, but use very, very sparingly and only when the stakes are extremely low.
Yeah.
Like, what happens if you get in the habit of doing that and then, I don't know, something crazy happens and one of your player characters dies, and then they find out that you are in the habit of modifying the monster HP or the damage or something. Why don't you just do one less damage and they wouldn't have... You get put in this impossible situation.
No, for sure. Yeah.
And if you meddle too much in the dice rolls, then when dice rolls go against players, suddenly it's you persecuting them because you're prepared to meddle in the dice rolls other times. Whereas there's something quite nice about saying, you know, if something does go badly for a player, like as a DM, I always feel bad about it. I feel terrible. But there is some safety in saying the dice decide, you know, that's the mechanics of the game we've all signed up to.
Yeah.
And so if you are meddling too much in those outcomes, then you essentially undermine that entire principle.
Absolutely. And this is why it can be really fun to, for very important roles, roll
in front of the table. I often do it if I feel like players might think I would fudge a roll. Like, not always, because I think people should trust their DM. But, you know, sometimes, especially if it's a contested role, you can like roll what the other person would get so the players know exactly what they need. And then like the celebrations when you kind of get it a kind of way higher than the person just saying, yeah, you succeed.
Exactly. I do that not even thinking about the players, but thinking about, as a GM myself, if I have any hint in my mind that I have a preferred outcome, I'm like, oh man, if I set a DC to 12 and they roll an 11 or so, or I roll 11 or whatever it is, I know myself as a person that there's a good chance I will be like, okay, that succeeded. Yeah. So if I'm ever in that situation where I think that I might change this, I'll do it in front of the table because then it's locked in.
Yeah. True.
Yeah, it sucks sometimes. I've done something similar where you go like, all right, cool. Yeah, no, you've been fighting these annoying enemies and they have like a DC 12 or something to get their really annoying ability to actually work and you're all really pissed off. I could just say, I just failed. No, I have to roll in front of the table and then like, yeah, sorry, you're stuck here.
But again, then you have the set, you can say like, look, the dice, I told you I told you what was required. Yeah. I rolled it in front of you. This is not my fault.
Yeah. Then
I created this monster. I created this situation, but it's not my fault.
It's great when the players go like, you're not allowed to use that dice anymore. I'm like, fine. Yeah. Be angry at the dice, not me. Yeah, yeah. Like, I'll use a different dice. Okay.
Yeah. So if you do find yourself adjusting things on the fly, maybe take a step back and have a look at some of the encounter building guides or try to balance things a bit more consistently. So having said that it's very risky and only sparingly adjust things on the fly, it's totally fine. And if we bring this back to low-level combat, it's totally fine and even really interesting, I think, to modify monster stats before combat.
Yep.
To homebrew things, you can take something from the monster manual and give it a bonus action that it didn't have. Maybe up the HP or lower the HP, but increase the damage that they do.
Yeah. I mean, often you get an enemy that you actually think is super cool to play, but it's not the right level for your players. Recently, I ran a Sea Hag encounter. They're only like CR2 or something like that. It's not very high. And I didn't have to make that many tweaks, really. Like, I made 3 of them instead of 1 and then upped the DC for their abilities a little bit. And suddenly, a monster that I wanted to use for whatever reason, and I can use it, even though in principle, it's not a monster for the level of combat that we were looking at.
Absolutely right. That's such good advice. Published monsters exist on a spectrum from, you know, challenging 4 level 1 characters to challenging to level 20 characters, but there's nothing really inherent about a CR5 monster that makes it that necessarily has to be more dangerous than a CR4 monster. If something narratively makes sense to put a particular type of enemy in an environment, if that enemy happens to be way too overpowered or way too underpowered, man, just change it up. Yeah. The story is more important than the mechanics of whoever decided that a fire elemental should be this, you know.
There's maybe a couple of exceptions where there are monsters that are so well known, like a beholder. You want your players to have the fear of God.
Yeah,
that's true.
If they face a beholder,
give them a nerfed Tarrasque.
You know? Yeah, like don't nerf a beholder. You know, like if you're going to throw one at the players, they should be afraid.
Yeah,
yeah.
But for most creatures that are not the most iconic monsters in a game, I think it's fine.
Learning from all your mistakes, or not even mistakes, of just things you've learned in retrospect, what I would do running low-level stuff again, I would look at monsters that are higher CR, but nerf their AC and HP probably.
And just probably the DC for any saves for their abilities.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just to be like, yeah, this monster has more interesting things. Like monsters that can like take someone out for like, you know, essentially cast slow on someone or whatever, that's super fun. But all of the ones that have those cool abilities are higher level and would just wipe a low level party. But yeah, I wasn't as confident doing homebrew for monsters when I started, so I didn't do that. I would do that differently.
Yeah, that's such a good idea.
Running encounters when I first started DMing was so stressful because I had no idea what I was doing. I would be like, is this going to wipe them out? I cannot figure it out for the life of me. And now it's much more straightforward, so
yeah. And that probably is one of the exceptions to the rule of don't modify things on the fly. If this is your first encounter in your new campaign and things are going really poorly for your party, maybe they're underpowered, you know, maybe they're not super experienced, or there are many, many reasons. But if it's like the first or second combat, you as the GM probably set this fight up, maybe tweak things a little bit just this one time and take that lesson going forward that maybe you need to scale things down.
I will say that, of course, officially the GMs never fudge any rolls, but the ones that I have fudged most is like the low level damage rolls in particular. Oh yeah, and I've taken away a few crits from my enemies when they go like, okay, yeah, you're just walking through here and a bunch of bullywugs come up and attack you, and then like, oh my god, I rolled 2 crits on these. Like, this is not. No, I mean, they're not going to crit on you.
The one time that I think it's okay to do that, and this might be controversial, but, and I have done this in the past and I've come away feeling really bad about it, is I think it, you should never one-shot your your party unless they're doing something incredibly stupid. If they're minding their own business or they're going along with the story and they get surprised and they get one shot and now they're unconscious and they can't do anything, that just feels bad. The whole point of these games is to have fun and to make choices.
Yeah, have things to do.
Yeah, and so the kind of one time that I would cautiously recommend reducing damage is if you're about to one shot someone.
Yeah.
At least give them one turn to do something.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, they spat on the king or something and yeah, they had it coming, right?
Yeah. Random encounters that aren't interesting, they're just like in the beginning to warm people up to fighting and stuff like that. Those are the ones where I've fudged the damage rolls for sure, because I'm like, why am I rolling good now suddenly? This is not interesting to anyone.
Yeah.
But as soon as your players get into the swing of things, now we're actually playing.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, if you've got a boss fight and your boss crit someone...
Well, it's a dragon, you know.
It's going to hurt you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess to reiterate, can do that. Be very, very careful with it. Only do it in limited circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to combat, yeah, go wild. Go nuts. Change things up. Experiment. Have fun.
As a general rule, if you are modifying monster stats, there's probably better guidelines that could tell you how to do it. But the rule of thumb that I always go for is... if I'm like, I don't know how many hit points this monster should have. I don't know how much damage this monster should have. Obviously, you could just look at a monster that is equivalent to the vague idea of the monster that you're wanting to do, but at the right level. The other thing you can do is figure out, like if I'm really not sure, I'll figure out what the kind of average damage roll is of the kind of main ability of all of my party. Say I want the combat to last for like 3 or 4-ish rounds. Crits, misses will obviously come into play because... you know, you're not expected to hit all the time. Sometimes you'll do a massive roll. Sometimes you'll have your like real crazy ability that you can use like once or twice. And that should give you a ballpark figure for the hit points.
Mm.
And then for damage rolls, similarly, like just figure out what your lowest character's hit points are and don't have an attack that's higher than that. And then maybe have one ability that is gonna take a chunk of hit points like out of the party, but maybe you can only use it like once and then follow it up with a bunch of lower level attacks. And you can mess with that, but that's like the kind of vague guideline that I give myself if I'm like not sure.
Yeah, that's good advice. Going on from that, the HP and the damage scaling. Probably people have different ideas about this, but I quite prefer less HP and more damage on my monsters.
I agree.
Yeah.
Not always. But it's when you're like taking a ton of damage that you're really like, oh man, I could die. And that's when you really start hyper-focusing in combat, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, the shortest way to get everyone to sharpen up real quick is to, in the initial round, you knock someone out, which I know is going against what you were just saying, of like one-shot stuff. But if it's higher level, knocking one person out of the party, what that does is make the fight maybe a bit more fair for the DM because you have so many things you can do. Like, players know their stuff so much better than as a DM, you know the abilities of your monsters because you have too many of them.
I constantly forget my monster's abilities, and after the fight, I'm like, God damn it, that was such a cool ability.
I don't think I've ever used legendary actions properly. I'm just like, oh God, I forget it again.
I think we could all ride.
Yeah.
I remember I played an assassin as a fight once and like the players completely stopped them and I was like, why? And then I was like, I remembered, I'd totally forgotten that they had like the bonus action dash disengage, like all that kind of thing. So they'd just been standing there taking all of these hits. I was just like, why am I such a dummy?
Yeah. I always liked the moment in battle, either as a PC or as a DM, when things like, okay, guys, now we really got to shape up. Okay, I'm going to go over here, do this. Mm-hmm. You try to bring them out. That stuff is where it gets really fun. And usually you need people to be a bit worried.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the same playing as it is when you're watching, but when I am watching D&D, my favorite combats are always the one where the DM is kind of like, okay, guys, you should probably be mindful of what you were doing.
Yes.
And you see the players kind of go, oh.
Are you sure you get to,
yeah.
to poke that sleeping dragon in the
Well, eye. It's often mid-combat and it's like not going very well and the players are still kind of a bit cavalier yeah. about it. And you, yeah. you as a DM, know what where this is going because you know how many hit points these people have left.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know how much damage the party's been taking, but they are like clearly still not in the mindset of kind of realizing how serious this is. And like we've said, you don't want to modify these monster stats on the fly. Like you have prepared yeah, exactly. this, you've committed to it, you've decided that this is a really deadly battle. Like you need to impart a bit of warning to the players that you guys need to sort your shit out because this is gonna otherwise end in a TPK.
Yeah, your players might not appreciate that your mad mage has power word kill and they are very very close to that HP threshold.
Yeah, exactly.
Put the fear of the gods in the world.
Yeah.
One other thing, going to the modifying monster stats, we talked about HP, we talked about damage and AC and those sorts of things. You can also modify things like resistances and vulnerabilities, which we've also talked about before as well. But I find this can be quite interesting if you have players that are partial to a bit of metagaming to mix things up. You know, maybe not every single of the species is vulnerable to poison and maybe this is a special snowflake that's resistant to poison or whatever.
Or they've lived in this area for a long time and they've evolved.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is a double-edged sword, very much so. But one thing you can do early on to make things more interesting is to give your bad guys powerful items. So it's like they themselves are still like a low level-ish enemy, but they've got the staff or whatever it is that had this amount of charges and that can really mess you up. Now, of course, the issue with that is that you're players are going to get that
yeah, when they so defeat true. Them.
So
I love that.
Bit
though.
Of motivation, though.
Yeah,
I love that. I think it's so much cooler to loot an epic weapon from someone that you've just killed, than just finding it hidden away somewhere.
For sure. Yeah, I think it's fine. Like, because I always err on the other side of like, I'll just give them more stuff. Because what's the worst that could happen from my point of view? Is like
the worst that could happen is you get to come up with even more ruthless enemies to throw at us.
Exactly. I mean, I've looked at the thing. If all this goes bad, I throw a Tarrasque in there. It's fine.
I find items quite stressful as well. I know how much I love like inventory management. It's really my thing, you know, and so I know that's pathetic, but
like, sure, everyone can relate.
Surely. Like my favorite thing in Baldur's Gate is like going through my 5,000 items and putting them in bags, and separating them out per party and like putting them in categories and then like making sure that everyone has their items. And then, you know, if we change the party, then we have to start again.
I would make fun of you if I hadn't done that myself.
Yeah. And so in my mind, everyone is like that. And so I feel a lot of pressure to give them cool stuff that they can then manage. And so I feel like if they have a fight and they don't get anything cool out of it, I fail. But then I'm very wary as well. I'm just like, the more I give them, I'm just really screwing myself over as a DM. So it can be quite difficult to manage. But for me in D&D, there's nothing better than having a cool magical item. Like nothing makes me happier. So, you know, just to the two DMs of the campaigns that I play in, just letting you know.
Yeah, it's funny because we put stuff in our campaigns because these are the things that speak to us. But so that means essentially that we're DMing our own campaign for ourselves, but we're not playing in it. And then...
Yeah. I kind of like making cool magical items. I really enjoyed making Bookvar. Enjoyed making a violin that no one's ever going to play.
It was cursed.
Well, it's clearly
super cursed. Yeah, I'm not picking that up.
You don't know.
No, we don't, but it's scary.
All right, well, that is our episode on making low-level combat more interesting.
There you go.
I think we gave one or two tips.
Probably.
Went on a journey.
Yeah.
Yep. Came back.
And here we are. Hey guys, Headley here. If you have a burning need to correct something that Walt said on the pod, or God forbid have a question for us, feel free to send an email to hi@tychostales.com. Thanks for listening.
You know, like when you describe a room and you accidentally overemphasize something, even if you think you don't do it, and then they just spend all the focus on that.
Yeah.
Or underemphasize it.
Yeah, yeah.
For example, I underemphasized the chest in the bedroom of Nikolai's house, which no one went and got that massive item that I had rolled.
Man, that was funny. Ellie and I were both prepping a couple of weeks ago, and she was like, oh, can you roll this D100 for me? I'm like, sure. Oh, 96, that's got to be either really good or really bad. And it turns out that was a 96 on a magic item table. So there was some, I guess you can't tell us, or can you tell us what it was?
Probably shouldn't. I might use it somewhere else. I feel a bit bad because I'm worried that it was because I underemphasized the chest that you didn't get it.
But it was a pretty sick item, was it?
It was, yeah. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, we had this incredibly, I don't know, overpowered artifact of some description right next to us.
And a heads up to be like looking out for it. And yet.
yeah. We seen in the group chat. I was like, oh, hey, there's got to be an epic
You didn't
item.
Search the chest. Then you did kill a bunch of enemies and you didn't search any of their bodies either.
Oh, my God.